Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we are talking to Sarah Meisner, who teaches adjunct at VCU and in surface research, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about it in a minute. And as assistant coordinator for the Art Foundation program, welcome, Sarah, to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
When you came in this morning, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, and there's a wonderful new art publication called The Daily Constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And you are the, hang on a second, I'm getting there, contributing editor, or one of the contributing editors.
Correct.
And you were talking about how wonderful it was that you were able to get this published fairly inexpensively in China. And I dropped the book at that point and said, yes, but what about the lead factor? And you told a wonderful sort of funny little story that I guess we can all kind of relate to when it comes to deadlines and shows and things. Tell us about what happened with your publishing experience in China.
Well, we were supposed to release the fifth issue of the Daily Constitutional at Scope Miami this December. And it seemed quite slow to come to us, and we're waiting for it and waiting
right.
for it. And John made many, many phone calls trying to find out exactly.
And John is the one who's editor of this?
Yes, John's the editor-in-chief.
Responsible for
yes.
getting grant for it and...
Yeah.
John Henry Blatter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and so John was fiercely trying to track this thing down. Come to find out, the weekend that it was supposed to be debuting, came to find out that it had been stuck on a shipping container filled with toys from China that were being inspected for lead paint. So
you got caught up in the lead in the lead paint disaster.
Yes,
after all.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right around the Christmas rush. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, let's talk a little bit about how you got started in all this. Were you an artist as a child? Did this come later on?
I don't come from a family of artists, so I guess I was artistic, but I don't think I ever really considered myself an artist.
Right.
Especially not as a child. I just guess I had lots of fun as a child. So
right.
whatever that meant was what I was at the time.
So were you drawing, painting, sculpting?
Yeah, just mostly drawing. I don't think I ever really got the sculpture bug. I never felt confident very
right.
much making three-dimensional objects. So
right.
yeah, I guess did a lot of drawing and... No.
Well, tell me a little bit about where you went to school.
Okay. I went to Alfred University
right.
for my undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is glass and ceramics
school.
Known.
Yeah, that's what they're known for.
Yeah,
And I studied glass and mostly paper making there. But at Alfred, there's no choosing a concentration. So it was very open. And I tried to take advantage of that and take
right.
a lot of different types of courses.
And what captured you?
Well, it took me a while to be captured, to be honest with you.
Well,
but
it usually does.
I guess the first thing to capture me was two teachers, and the first being Diane Cox, and the second being Stephen Edwards, and they happened to be teaching papermaking and glass, respectively. And their enthusiasm and the way they taught, and it really drew me in and sucked me in and made me interested beyond the material at first, which was really important because it took me a while to kind of get into the material.
Yeah, I was going to say, if somebody's listening and they know nothing about paper making, right?
Right.
Which, you know, I'm sure there are some people out there like me. What?
Well,
I'm sorry, you got interested in making paper?
Right,
no,
yeah.
Just go buy some, you know?
Right, exactly.
I mean... Well, I know that's horribly naive of me to say, but do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I buy it now, so.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So you've come full circle.
I did,
you?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I have a fierce appreciation for it. So
on to the next thing. No, seriously. I mean, you got interested in paper. I think that's sort of fascinating.
Yeah.
Tell
well,
me about that.
Well, it was – actually, now that I say it, I kind of go back on myself because it was it was geared towards a sculptural practice. So
yes.
It was really about making skins and layers.
Mm.
Which at the time, it kind of blew my mind, and I hadn't
Why?
Really thought
Why did
about
it. Blow your
it.
Mind?
Just because it was the first time in which I found myself, contemplating what layers can do, and compositionally and conceptually how layers interact with one another. And it started my art making for the first time. I know that sounds a bit vague, but it was and obvious at the same time. But it was one of those things where all, you know, the world kind of combined at the right moment with the right person. And it was a great group of people.
Do you know why that was fascinating to you? I mean, you know, when you're talking about layers and you're talking about skin, what do you mean? What do you mean by skin?
Well, at the time I was a sophomore in college, so I was 19 or 20. And I guess for many obvious reasons, you kind of feel like that's the first point in your life where you're dissecting your own layers and trying to figure out what you want to do and what it's all about and what direction you want to go. So
it was metaphorical?
Yeah. So for me, it was just one of those moments where it was a visual dissection of it, and it just made sense.
Did it help you in any way make those decisions or get more clarity, or was that just a process within a process? In other words, as you got involved in doing this, you said,
it certainly didn't answer any questions for me, but it gave me some form of, you know, of finished product, you know, for the first time. I was enthusiastic about the process and also about what was the outcome of it. Mm-hmm. And it was building up my studio practice. And also it was.
Did you make the paper? Yeah.
So you learn the whole spiel about, you know, different types of fibers and, you know, different, you know, the craft.
So let's see. So you go out, you cut down a tree.
Right? Yeah, because that's exactly what we do at Alfred. No, we bought the fibers. Right. So we cheated a little.
A little cheat. That's
yeah,
okay.
We cheated.
That's all right. It takes too much time to cut down a tree.
Yeah.
Was paper sort of the first thing that you started to get an interest in then move into glass?
Yeah, it was really the class more than it was the paper. But it was the first thing that really sparked my interest and drove me to want to be an artist.
To think I'll do this crazy art thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it made me explore in different ways. And it actually transitioned beautifully into glass, I think.
How was that?
Well, first of all, there's the whole the thing that was so compelling to me about paper making was how something so strong could be so delicate looking.
Yeah,
And so I was really pushing the boundaries of the translucency of the fiber and how long I could beat it for and keep it at a strength. And
how long you could what?
Oh, when you beat the fiber, you can beat up the fibers very fine. So it creates a thinner, you know, more delicate looking sheet of paper, but it can be quite strong still. So
really?
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, that's what drove it all into glass, when I could create something that had had more structural significance and yet could be very thin or, you know, so it was compelling in that way. And also the transparency of it was compelling to me.
Yeah. So what kind of glass work did you start in? Because I'm sure that people who don't know anything about glass art are thinking that you're, you know, sitting there in front of a furnace, pulling out big blobs of glass and blowing into a long tube.
Yeah.
And
I was never good at that.
Yeah.
So I did glass casting, which meant I made a lot of molds. And so I took mold making and I learned how to do all sorts of different types of molds. But while I was at Alfred, it was mostly hot casting.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was we usually used rigid sand or pressed sand. And
how does that work?
You ladle it out of a furnace and into a
bucket of sand. Where you've worked out whatever it is you want the image to look like.
Right, right.
So the sand becomes the mold.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So it has some binders in it, but
great.
Easy as that.
So tell me about your first works. What were they? What were they like in glass?
Bad.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Of course they were. Okay, tell me about your second works.
I don't know. I think for quite a while I was interested in maps and the cartography of kind of finding your location and finding where you're supposed to be and the idea of this objective surface that can be read quite literally, and then also having that the world apart from how your emotion feels that same space, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was really fascinated with the idea of like how someone could just figure me out based on a map. So I was trying to make maps that would help people figure it all out, you know, because that's important.
Tell me more. That's interesting. Tell me. That's really interesting. I'm not sure I understand, but tell me.
So I guess
when you say maps, what do you mean? Literally making maps? Or?
Yeah. I was studying maps and different types of maps. And uh-huh. I guess the ones that got me the most were the wind patterns and just kind of looking at wind patterns and how it went across the globe and just kind of relating that back to how I was on my journey.
Right.
and
can you describe a piece that would capture that? Or?
Oh, gosh. It's been a while. Well, I guess text has always been in the works, so there would be a good amount of text to kind of create to make it look like that was the surface or whatever. And I guess it was just working with different types, forms of mapping and then looking at that, studying that, and then relating it all back to myself. So it was just, if it was based on a path that I took from my house to the studio, or if it was based on the drive home from work or whatever, you know, it was just kind of keeping two times. So it was keeping times of the actual mileage and the objective side of it, but also kind of where my headspace was during the period of time. So it was just kind of trying to layer the two pieces of information one on top of another.
How did you get where your headspace was at the time into the piece? God.
I write a lot, and I think that artists kind of share in being hyper aware of where they are, especially if it's wrong or feels a little bit wrong. I think your senses are a little bit heightened by it. But also, it's, you know, it's also like practicing. You know, you just kind of are more conscious from one time to another. And
It's sort of interesting because that brings us to something you said. You said, constantly I'm wondering what it takes to make a hush whisper resonate. Soft, tactile rhythm and rich, luxurious ripples lull the eye into a contemplative silence. This muted individual headspace is the space in which I am most interested. Mm-hmm. And after I read that, I sort of jotted down here. I said, this sounds almost meditative. Is that?
Yeah, that was written during grad school.
Oh, was it?
And I just graduated from VCU, so it's a little bit of a, I don't know if that's an excuse or not. But when I wrote that and when That was definitely kind of how I dealt with my 2 years in grad school, because it's just an abundance kind of thoughts and ideas and different perspectives all coming down on you at once. Mm-hmm. And so it takes quite a bit to digest it all. Mm-hmm. And it as anyone who goes through grad school can sympathize with me, it takes a lot out of you, and it kind of takes the wind out of your sails, so to speak. So it took me a little while, but that's just what I needed to get myself through. And also just being in Virginia, being here was very important for me, because my family is here, my family's roots are here. So it was nice for me because I had that escape. And I learned quickly that escape was a precious thing for me, and I needed it.
Which escape?
To visit with family and to have that extended family, I might add. My parents are back in Rhode Island. Right. But to visit with family and to have that time where it's such a precious time. And I tried really hard not to take advantage of it. And it's interesting because when you're in grad school, you're so highly aware of the time and how little time or how much time you have. It's very important. It's like gold.
Right.
So how you spend it is, or I felt like you were kind of under a magnifying glass as far as how you were spending your time.
Mm-hmm.
And And it was interesting because I always felt that it was a 2-hour drive, 64 West, to where my grandpa and my grandmother lived and my brothers now live.
Where are they, in Stanton or Lexington?
Yeah, well, in the Shenandoah Valley. Right. So they're scattered from Verona to Broadway.
Right.
Down 81 or up 81. And so that is nice. It was a nice long drive to kind of get it all out of my system and then be away from it.
Well, let's take a short break here from this delightful conversation with Sarah Meisner, who teaches adjunct at VCU and is assistant coordinator for Art Foundation. She also teaches a class called Surface Research, which we've talked about a little bit. And we're getting a wonderful perspective from a young artist as to her struggles, her trials and tribulations and exaltations as she went through and finished graduate school. You've also said that the translucency, subtlety, and serene quiet, these traits are common threads in the work that begs the viewer to slow down, whisper, and listen. A world of rich layering and tactile language unfolds upon the person patient enough to look closely. And at the risk of me sounding completely ridiculous, that again sort of almost speaks to a meditative process that brings you to an awareness, an acute awareness in the moment and living in the moment, to sort of still the mind and stop the struggle, to sort of exist in the moment, judging it, you know, possibly neither positively or negatively, but just being alive and cherishing this moment of life. Is your work about that at all, or am I just completely...
Well, that's a beautiful thing, I think, and I definitely try to do that and to be thankful for what I have. And I do feel like in the last 2 years, I've felt very blessed to be where I am and to be doing what I'm doing and to be surrounded with the people I'm surrounded by. And it's reflected in the work, absolutely.
Even though you said something interesting before, how difficult this was.
Yeah.
Because I know that people have been through the process understand that. But other people are sitting going, I thought art school was fun.
It is fun. It's definitely fun. I'm not saying it's emotionally tough. Dissect yourself and to be open to that. And I
dissect yourself how?
Just in your practice and why you make and what it's all about and what's important to you and all of those things become big questions.
At least
for me.
I mean, they really are asking you, why are you doing this?
Yeah, right, exactly.
What's this about?
And for me, I think that it was one of those times, like I was saying earlier, where the stars just aligned and it came together at a moment and at a place where it's just what it came to be.
Are you able to answer any of those questions, or are they all still in flux? I mean, because you just graduated master's program.
I'm a recent grad. I pick and choose my battles, right? So some have absolutely been answered. And
like, for instance?
Why make and...
So why make?
Goodness.
That's a good
sound
one.
Sound like Jack Wax.
aren't you glad you stopped by today?
Yeah, I am thrilled.
Jack Wax, by the way, is not a children's story. Jack Wax is now known as the grandfather of glass art, or one of a couple of them anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, teaches at VCU, is a wonderful guy.
Yeah, so. And he was my mentor while I was in grad school. So,
what are you doing here, kid?
Okay. Spotlight. Well, I think that the past 2 years absolutely changed why for me. What I've come to notice is that for one thing that I definitely am trying to do and give is that which has been given to me. And I find that oftentimes that which is most guarded and that which we most guard as human beings is oftentimes where we find commonality. And so I really like to focus on that as a person and as a human being. Just
vulnerability,
because,
word comes to mind.
Right. But also just there's a sincere and utter appreciation and joy and for it. And I guess for me, I feel like this is what I have, and I hope that mm-hmm. when someone is looking or experiencing or whatever, that they have the opportunity to kind of feel my sincere appreciation and feel that I'm trying to reach out and connect mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. perfect strangers, because mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. there's a lot that we have in common.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, talk about the first piece that really got some attention for you was your thesis piece,
uh-huh.
which you, okay, you guys listening to this? Which you wrote in glass.
Yeah.
I'll bet Jack is still reading that one. But I mean, you didn't write the whole thing in glass. I mean, you wrote a synopsis of it in glass, right?
It was the first draft. Yeah, and yeah, really? I kind of am bummed about it because I wish I could go back. Well, I don't know if I wish I could, but because
right.
I can.
But when it
went up, I was kind of wishing it had been my final draft, just because the first draft was definitely that rough, and mm-hmm. and it was more vulnerable than I wanted it to be, but that's okay. It was a very personal thesis, so. I was writing a lot about family and location, like I said, and I was writing a lot about that which most influenced me in the 2 years, and it didn't necessarily happen within the walls of the school,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. which is, you know, what it is. And
right.
But for me, it was kind of having the legacy of someone in my family who passed during mm-hmm. my 2 years in mm-hmm. grad school, and he, it's kind of funny. He grew tomatoes really well, and he had this amazing garden my whole life. And the thing that struck me about him was that he gave out all of his tomatoes so
right.
freely. And
right.
I just thought, you know, it's so humble and so easy to do.
Right.
And it was so beautiful. And so many people were touched by that or really felt that he had made their lives brighter, and
right.
he certainly made mine brighter. So,
right.
yeah, I tried to just kind of, I wanted to give out my tomatoes,
yeah.
so to speak, and put it all out there for people. So,
give out my tomatoes. That's
yeah.
wonderful. That's great. You said a little bit earlier to me before the interview that you love teaching. So let's talk about that a little bit. Tell me a little bit about your teaching. Right.
Well, it's a little bit of everything all wrapped up into one classroom. And for me, I'm just trying to get them to develop a material vocabulary as well as get them to stretch their understanding of materials and how to use them and kind of push their boundaries a little bit.
Uh-huh. What kind of materials?
Anything.
Really?
Anything. Because I really try and cover everything as
uh-huh.
we're supposed to.
Right.
But I try and cover a little bit of everything. So I try and cover computer generated imagery mm-hmm. as well as imagery that they put together from their garbage. So it's mm-hmm. really kind of anywhere and everywhere.
Right.
And it's a brilliant class to be teaching, and so much
really?
Fun. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Give me an idea of a project.
Well, I have quite a few, but I guess one that would relate back to this interview would be, I take them to the Special Collections Library
mm-hmm.
on campus, which is fantastic. And so I bring them there and show them lots of different ways of dealing with books, book art, and pages and sequencing. So they can really take any angle that they choose to. They
mm-hmm.
can, you know, really focus on sequencing and imagery and how, you know, white space, black space, what comes mm-hmm. next, negative space, and kind of dealing with a layering of imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could really take it in a sculptural manner and, you know, dig into it, take out of it, carve it, whatever
mm-hmm.
they choose. And I think that that's one of the moments so that it kind of hits them that the two dimension and the third dimension kind of come together into
mm-hmm.
one and create this
mm-hmm.
object of their choice. And they all kind of hone in on what they're most interested in the library, because
right.
they have so many different versions of what book art is. And
mm-hmm.
so it's kind of an eye-opening opportunity, I think. right. for them to kind of explore uh-huh. what interests them the most.
Yeah.
So, okay. yeah. yeah. yeah.
Well, I think we're out of time here.
Okay.
So I want to thank you for coming in and talking today. Thanks you folks for listening, for tuning in. And we hope to see you for lunch again on the radio next Friday at 12:30. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM. It's Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us, and we've been talking with Sarah Meisner, who teaches surface research at VCU as an adjunct instructor and is also the assistant coordinator for the Arts Foundation program and a contributing editor of the Daily Constitutional, correct? How about a website? Can anybody?
Yeah, www.sarahrbmeiser.com.
Okay, say it again. www.sarahrbmeiser.com. Okay. Great. All right, Sarah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Uh-huh.